Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dr. Ray Rhodes to the podcast. Dr. Rhodes serves as founding pastor of Grace Community Church of Dawsonville, Georgia, and is also president of Nourished in the Word Ministries. He's also author of a recently released book entitled Susie, The Life and Legacy of Susanna Spurgeon, Wife of Charles Spurgeon. Dr. Rhodes, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
It's great to be with you, Dr. Allen. I hope you're doing well today.
Yeah, thank you. We're doing great here. And man, it's just a delight to have you recording today with me. I'll tell you, I devoured your book when it came out, your book on Susie, and enjoyed every aspect of it. Much of the story I was familiar with, but you certainly had had aspects there I had not come across before. So on the front end of the conversation today, I want to commend your book. Again, it's entitled Susie, The Life and Legacy of Susanna Spurgeon, Wife of Charles Spurgeon. It's out with Moody Publishers, and you have a very nice foreword from our friend Al Mohler at Southern Seminary as well. So listen, we're here recording. As I mentioned to you before we started this recording, I'm in the Spurgeon Library, the podcast studios within it. So everything is fitting and good and right to have a conversation about the ministry of the pastor's wife with Ray Rhodes about Susanna Spurgeon and this lady who in so many different ways facilitated and extended Spurgeon's ministry both in his life and after his passing as well. So, brother, thank you for joining me for Preaching and Preachers, and I've been looking forward to the conversation.
Well, thank you, and thank you for the great Spurgeon Library there. What God is doing at Midwestern is wonderful.
So let's get into, again, we want to talk about the book. We want to talk about the ministry of the pastor's wife. And to me, it was a natural conversation to have because the way you unpack Susie, the way you unpack this story, the way you unpack her reach, again, the way she extended Charles's ministry in his life and then further extended it after his passing is a compelling read. So I guess, though, but as far as the book itself, tell us a bit of the story of the book, why you decided to write on it, where your interest came from, how they developed. Give us the background.
Yeah, well, like many Baptist pastors and others, I've been interested in Charles Spurgeon for a long time. I think I read the first biography of him, maybe 1990, but didn't pay a lot of attention to Susie. And life went on, continued reading biographies of Spurgeon and other books by him, went back to seminary and graduated 2016 from Southern, got my doctorate there. And for my thesis, I wanted to write on Spurgeon and trying to find some angle that had not been covered. And since then, I've discovered there are many angles to Spurgeon that's still out there. It's a great frontier still. But I discovered no one had really written about his marriage, and I was doing biblical spirituality there and looked at prayer and Bible reading in their marriage. And that led me to discover Susie Spurgeon really in a fresh way. And the more layers I peeled back, the more I saw in this wonderful and fascinating woman. And after that process, I began talking to publishers and seemed that there was interest in a biography of Susanna Spurgeon. I was taken aback by this. I was really surprised that no one had ever attempted a full biography of her. There was a small one done, a beautiful biography, 1903, by Charles Ray, but that's it. This married to one of the greatest preachers in all of church history, a wonderful author and minister involved in ministry herself, Susie, and yet no one really tackled the project. So it was really an author's dream, I think, to find such a fascinating subject, and also to discover that no one had really written about her. And when Moody Publishers, when I got to talk to them, they were immediately excited about the project, and here we are today. It's been a great journey.
Yeah, and I can't help but ask, now that this book is out and doing well, do you have any other ambitions about writing on the life and ministry of Spurgeon?
Yes, I'm already under contract with Moody again. We're doing a follow-up book called Spurgeon in Love, A Persevering Victorian Romance. And that is scheduled to come out February of 2021. So that's we're in process now. And we'll further unpack their marriage and look at it more from a thematic approach as well.
Oh, good for you. Well, I look forward to receiving that as well. And, you know, we have a partnership with Moody Publishers here at Midwestern, and, you know, a lot of great publishers out there, of course, including B&H. the denominational printing press. But Moody is doing great work, and we're grateful for the partnership we have and glad to see you publish this book with them. So let's get into the book a little more specifically. Give us the broad contours of Susanna's life.
Yeah, well, Susanna was born, she's a city girl all of her life. She was born in London in 1832. She's about 2.5 years older than Charles. He was born in 1834. And all she had ever known, really, and all she ever knew was city life, London. And she spent a good bit of time in Paris, where she learned to speak French, and she became very acquainted with the French culture, and served as the tour guide on her honeymoon, her and Charles's honeymoon, as they went to Paris for about 10 days during that time. So all she knew was the city, and Charles, of course, from more of the rural countryside of England, which made an interesting match. Her family seemed to be relatively well off at times, but her dad also struggled financially. But her larger family included folks that seemed to be pretty well off financially, so she seemed to have benefits of culture and education and experiences that maybe other London ladies, young ladies, might not have experienced. And so she brought all of that to their marriage. She was very refined, and you can see that even when Spurgeon comes to preach for the first time at the New Park Street Chapel at that time. She hears him that evening, and she, by her writing, she indicates that she's accustomed to a much more refined ministry than what she heard from 19-year-old Charles Spurgeon. So I think that gives us a little bit of perspective. She had made a profession of faith about a year prior to that Spurgeon preached there, December 18th, 1853. So sometime in late 1852, she had made a profession of faith at another church. She was not a church member anywhere, but attended the New Park Street Chapel. So immediately after that profession of faith, she fell into what she considered to be a backsliding condition. Was pretty cold to the things of God, had not told anyone about her profession or her struggles in faith until after Spurgeon was preaching more regularly at the chapel. She told her cousin by marriage, William Olney, about her struggles. He then told Charles, and Charles gave her a copy of The Pilgrim's Progress, and that began she opened up at that point to speaking with Charles about her own spiritual struggles. And then it seems that the Holy Spirit just took the kindling that was on her heart and set it afire, and she began to grow rapidly in the faith.
You know, one of the things I like about the book is, again, you cover terrain that really is not dealt with in many, if any, other places. So much about their domestic life, and that you get into that, what that looked like, how they functioned, the support structure they had. You talk about some income issues of income and expenditures here. Help us draw lines from the life and ministry of Susie Spurgeon to the 21st century pastor's wife.
Yeah, and I think as I think of Susie as a pastor's wife and a 21st century pastor's wife, there's several elements I think we can learn from her. And, you know, her life, her own health, Charles's ministry was wrought with many challenges. Of course, wonderful experiences as well. He was very popular, and the church, a large church, and many opportunities to preach and write and all the other. But along with that seemingly romantic life on the outside were many challenges that they faced right off the bat. You know, first year of their marriage, his popularity is growing. The church is growing. Requests are coming in for his time. And so he's being stretched, and therefore she is as well. Though she's traveling with him some, he's often away from home with his ministry, and his public ministry, he viewed it as such that he would not allow anything to hinder him from his public ministry. Susie embraced that, so they had a mutual vision for ministry, that was the first priority to them. But they had the music hall disaster that probably many of your listeners are aware of. The very first year of their marriage, they had two twin babies at home. Was it 9 people that died at the music hall disaster? Someone cried fire, fire, and folks panicked. He was really blasted in the press, in many cases by fellow Christians who didn't appreciate his theological views and saw him as sort of a shooting star that would quickly come down. So they had ministry challenges. Along with that, especially following the Music Hall disaster, Charles faced depression. He faced his own physical affliction about 10 years into marriage. Susie also became essentially an invalid for much of the rest of her life. He battled in great theological controversies, the last one being the downgrade controversy, which Susie believed is the reason, the earthly reason at least, that he died such a young death at age 57. He died really of a broken heart. Many of his own students didn't stand with him during that controversy. But what she provided to him through physical problems, through emotional struggles, and you know, many pastors have physical issues. Many pastors face various levels of depression, ministry challenges, theological controversies that all of us must work our way through. But she provided really a stabilizing force for Charles. She didn't panic. She didn't unravel. She hit her knees in prayer when trouble was their closest companion, it seemed, at times, as the psalmist described it. She prayed. She was faithful to Scripture. And when she would get news, sometimes she would receive bad news before he would. As he would be traveling, she would go to the Scripture, and then she would write him and encourage him that God could be trusted through it all. She read to him when he was depressed. He'd come home on a Sunday night sometime. Every pastor knows what this feels like, to be empty on a Sunday night and really sort of down. Many pastors think about resigning on Monday mornings, I've often heard. But Susie would read poetry to him. She would read the Puritans to him. And she just ministered to him. And I think that had she been a different sort of woman, then Charles may not have been able to accomplish the things that he accomplished in ministry. I don't think the story has yet been told of how important her sacrifices were to Charles Spurgeon becoming the man that we honor today. In fact, I don't think we have him as we have him unless he had her, unless he was married to Susanna Spurgeon. So she was a stabilizing force. She was a prayer warrior. She was in the Word herself. She was an encourager. She ministered to her husband. She embraced his vision of ministry. And then she lived out her days extending his legacy. And I think that's really her greatest legacy. She did so many wonderful things. But her engagement for the rest of her life in extending his legacy, I think, is a blessing. We have the Spurgeon Library in Kansas City at New Western Baptist Theological Seminary. His books are in bookstores everywhere. We're still reading, talking about, studying, writing doctoral dissertations on Charles Spurgeon. And so much of that can be laid, I think, at Susie's feet for her support and love of her husband.
Yeah, and you think about the way she functioned. Obviously, she was, you know, domestically oriented to the home, but she was busy, I mean, hour by hour ministering beyond. We'll get here in a moment to the Minister's Book Fund and those sorts of things. But back to that point of encouragement, you have a woman who for so many years, as you've already intimated, experienced acute physical ailments, practically an invalid for many years. Married to a husband with a massive ministry, perhaps at certain points, the best known preacher of the English language, the most influential minister of the English language. With that came, preaching opportunities, all the time, traveling by carriage, by train to preach in different places. And then, of course, with Spurgeon's physical ailments and his emotional bouts with depression, I mean, she really did play an instrumental role in enabling him not only logistically to preach so much and write so much and maintain such a full life and schedule, but she did so much to really prop him up spiritually and emotionally so that he wanted to maintain such a busy and full life of ministry.
That's right. You know, Spurgeon wrote a letter to his mother, and he describes Susie. He says, "Susie is a blessed creature and does not attempt to keep me from the Lord's work. But on the contrary, she is willing to deny herself for the Lord's sake. How sweetly she cheers me when I think I have not preached well. And she bids me on again and whispers, 'What, you unbelieving, at such an example success, what, you doubt?'" And so Susie was just like that. He considered her beautiful, a friend. He delighted in her. And she was a minister, even a minister to him, minister to her husband, even as she ministered to pastors across the continent through her book fund and otherwise.
Dr. Rhodes, let me interrupt you here just for a moment. We want to have a word of update from Midwestern Seminary.
Midwestern Seminary's 81-hour Master of Divinity degree prepares you for ministry today and tomorrow. Midwestern Seminary's flagship degree program is our primary track for ministry preparation. Requiring only 81 credit hours, the MDiv program is an efficient option for students, equipping them to serve the church in pastoral ministry. Residential students will be trained in a unique community environment passionately focused on the local church. Online students can earn the full degree without leaving their current ministry context. Come be a part of one of the fastest growing seminaries in North America as we develop a new culture of discipleship devoted to the local church and committed to taking God's unchanging word into a rapidly changing world. Visit mbts.edu/mdiv today.
All right, I'm back visiting with Dr. Ray Rhodes on the ministry of the pastor's wife. So let's fast forward to the latter years of Susie's life in the Minister's Book Fund. Talk about that ministry and what that looked like, how she facilitated, the funds she raised, the books that were bought and dispensed. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, 1875, Spurgeon released Volume 1 of his lectures to my students. Well, before it was actually on the shelf to purchase, he gave Susie a proof copy, asked her to read through that and give her opinion of it. And she was excited about it and said, "I wish we could give a copy of this to every pastor in England." And sort of taken aback when Spurgeon said to her, "Then Susie, why don't you make that happen?" She didn't expect that he would encourage her in such a way to do that. But she found some money that she had put aside, and it was enough to purchase 100 copies of Lectures to My Students, and Volume 1, and with the publisher's help. And she sent those out. She developed guidelines for who could receive those books. And that just continued to grow. Requests come in. Money came in to do that. She was absolutely committed to only sending books that were doctrinally sound, that were biblically faithful, that were gospel-centered, and primarily her husband's books, but not exclusively those. And so she would get sometimes donations of books that she would really just cast into the fire. They were good for nothing because ministers needed good food, and if ministers were blessed with good books, and some of these ministers, Dr. Allen, as you know, they were. Poverty abounded in the minister's home in Victorian England, and especially in the homes of nonconformist pastors and independent pastors. They often had large families needing health care. Their churches were small, and they would not spend money on books when they had children in need of food and clothing and barely enough to survive on, really. And so Susie, you know, as she discovered about that, the more she realized if we can get resources into the hands of pastors, those churches will be stronger and the gospel will spread. Those pastors will be blessed. Their homes will be encouraged. Those churches will be better and the gospel will spread. And she also tried to minister as best she could to other needs of the home, sending the wife a new dress or children clothing. And other items for the family that would be a blessing to them. So that began in 1875. It continued to grow. And by the time she died in 1903, her book fund had given away 200,000 books to poor pastors, not only in England, but in various places, missionaries and others around the world. And it continued on after she died. She was concerned a bit before she died what would happen to the book fund, and then she came to the conclusion that God has his servants and his people will be ministered to throughout. And one of her good friends, one of their household servants as well, took on the task of the book fund for a number of years afterwards. And then it's reappeared, not as Mrs. Spurgeon's book fund, but inspired by her in various settings. Even today, I think the Banner of Truth has a book fund inspired by Mrs. Spurgeon's work. Also, there's a new ministry called the Susanna Project that is getting digital books in the hands of poor pastors and missionaries in other parts of the world today as well. So that was her commitment, to get good resources and other materials into the hands of pastors, and it left a legacy. Who knows? Only God knows, really, the tremendous fruit that came from and that still comes from her work.
You know, as we had this conversation, I'm reminded that our listeners are largely ministers, you know, pastors, or seminary students training for the pastorate. And we have tens of thousands of downloads every month of this podcast. And as we're talking about this, I'm chastened by the fact that there probably aren't that many pastors' wives listening to this podcast, because this trends heavily, skews heavily towards pastors and seminary students training for the pastorate. So that being said, help us to think of Susanna kind of through the eyes of Charles, his appreciation for her, his cherishing of her, and what that might say to us who are ministers and how we should cherish the wives God has given us.
Great question, great points there, Dr. Allen. You know, Spurgeon lived in a different era, the Victorian era. He was influenced both by lots of people, but I think we can especially draw lines back to the Puritans and also men like George Whitfield. And the Puritans, many times folks look at, think of them and imagine that they were not very affectionate, not very romantic. The opposite is actually true. Leland Ryken's wonderful book on Puritans as they really were.
Worldly Saints.
Excuse me?
I was just naming the book, Worldly Saints.
Yeah, Worldly Saints. Yes, sir. That's right. A wonderful book that really gives us a window into the heart of many of these Puritan pastors who were very affectionate towards their wives. And then you've got George Whitfield, who loved his wife, and yet his mindset was his public ministry was first. Nothing would hinder that. And his wife was more of support for that, but not as romantically inclined, their view of marriage. In fact, you know, Whitfield could just move forward even in the midst of great pressures at home and struggles that they may have faced. I think Spurgeon had some of both of that, the affection, the glowing sort of way Spurgeon would write to Susie very romantically, that the Puritans displayed, but also he had this commitment like George Whitfield. His ministry was first. Susie believed that, embraced that as well. And yet, even so, even when he's out there, he's traveling from home, he makes sure that she's cared for. He writes her every day. He sends gifts to her. He speaks of daydreaming of her while he is away. He writes the most tender, romantic love letters to her. Really, I've often thought it will make a Victorian blush the way Spurgeon wrote to his beloved wife. He made sure her needs were cared for. They had employees at their home. He was able to afford that, to see to their care. By the time he died, they had, I think, 9 full-time household employees. They called them servants then, not slaves, but servants. And so her every need was cared for. But they, when they were together, they held hands. They walked the property together. He gave great attention to her needs. There's one really moving story of a visitor to their home. They'd been out together. They come back in. Susie is lying there on the sofa. And Charles goes over to her, puts his arm around her, and he leads the group in prayer, praying specifically for Susie. So he prayed for her. He wrote to her. He provided for her needs, and he enjoyed her company. So it wasn't just a marriage of convenience. She's a help to me in my ministry. It was a marriage of deepest affection. And I think as pastors, we need to communicate that to our wives. We need to let them know through letters, through phone calls, through conversations, through spending time with them. We need to let them know how much we value them, how important they are to us personally, how much we treasure them. And Spurgeon did all of those things in the ministry context that he existed in.
You know, just a couple of weeks ago, I was visiting with a couple of students on campus. My wife and I were visiting with them, and students we know well, and they made the comment to us, kind of joking, but, you know, kind of teasing us, but they said it sincerely. They said, you know, people on campus talk about how the Allens are so lovey-dovey. And I kind of blushed, and I just said, well, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, people notice, like, when you guys are walking across campus, you're always holding hands. When your wife enters the room, you always stand up, and you know, greet her with a kiss on the cheek. And it's never dawned to me as those being, you know, over-the-top signs of affection. It's just kind of how we live. And so my wife and I got a real chuckle out of that. But as I reflected on it in the aftermath, I thought, you know, that's probably a good thing that folks see the seminary's president and his wife, who have true affection for one another and enjoy being with one another and reflexively, kind of intuitively hold hands when they walk across campus. That's just how we are. And as you reflect on Susanna and Charles, you know, it's just encouraging to hear that this wasn't just a mega preacher with a, you know, a mega pen and who wrote and preached and was so influential, but this was a man who loved and cherished his wife. And this is a woman who loved and cherished and supported her husband. And those are models worthy of emulation. Dr. Rhodes, you've done us a real service, and the church a real service, through your book, Susie, The Life and Legacy of Susanna Spurgeon. And I want to thank you for your work. Thank you for your service to the church more broadly and to your friendship with us here at Midwestern Seminary and the Spurgeon Library. Thank you for being with me on Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Dr. Allen. Many blessings to you, brother.
Thank you for being with us today and for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, go to my website, jasonkallen.com. That's jasonkallen.com.